Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Heel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Michelle Huey, who is the founder of VimInvigor.com and also a software application that she built out of a need she saw called ShopDot. And we dive into a bunch of stuff. She's an incredibly smart woman I've enjoyed chatting with over the last couple of years and getting to know. And talk about a wide range of topics, but one of the things I found most interesting was how she started her business. Was growing quickly, was growing fast, great revenue. You know, everything from the outside looked fantastic, but on the inside was losing money, wasn't being efficient, wasn't bringing home any profits, and what she did specifically to turn that around. So I love getting into that part of her story. We talk about SEO. She's got one of the best e-commerce blogs I have seen in a long time. And so we talk about how much that's driving for her now in 2024 when SEO has gotten so much harder, the ROI she's seeing there. She even makes a recommendation about the agency that she uses that she loves. And we also talk about a couple of fun things. Fun with a big asterisk, interesting maybe is more appropriate. She testified in front of the Senate, I believe Finance Committee, a year or two ago about sales tax, something that is just an absolute cluster mess in the United States, at least. So we talked about that experience, what it was like doing that, preparing for that. And she is one of the very rare people I know that spends time in Montana and also other places, kind of like I do. And so we geek out a little bit about that because that's just, you know, something I'm super interested in and not a lot of people are in that boat. And so that's where we kick things off. Hope you enjoy the discussion, a really fun one, and we're going to get into it right after this. Attention Shopify sellers, say goodbye to annoying design limitations and outdated user interfaces. Now you can customize every inch of your website with the brand new landing page builder inside the Zipify Pages app. Zipify Pages just released their biggest upgrade ever, so now you can drag, drop, or swap any element on practically any page to make your store look and perform exactly the way you want it to. Zipify Pages was created by my friend Ezra Firestone, founder of a $175 million Shopify store, and it's packed with over 70 marketing templates you can use to generate leads, run promos, and scale any brand. And because the templates come from Ezra's own 8- and 9-figure brands, you know they actually work. You can try Zipify Pages and their brand new builder for free for 14 days at zipifypages.com. That's Z-I-P-I-F-Y pages.com. Today's episode is brought to you by the E-Commerce Fuel private community, the most vibrant and active discussion forum for owners of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce businesses. So how is it any different from other communities online or DTC Twitter? Three big reasons. First, it's vetted. Everyone inside owns a 7- or 8-figure business. Average member does about $5 million top line per year. About 15% are doing into the 8 figures. You get advice from owners who have actually been there in the trenches and that you know you can trust it because we vetted them and they're actually doing what they say they are. Secondly, no pitching. There's no affiliate links, no vendors hawking stuff at you. This is just real operators sharing what's working. And then finally, reciprocity is one of our biggest values when we moderate. We require that everyone shares something when they come in so you learn from them, but also we don't let people just come in and strip mine the community for information so you get a really healthy dynamic group. So confident this will be a game changer for your business that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. Join the community, stay for a year, and if you don't see 10x the value relative to your membership fees, we'll refund all of them plus give you $1,000 just for the hassle. So if it sounds interesting, check us out. We'd love to have you apply, and you can learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Missoula, you were originally in, and then you added New York or vice versa, or how did that all transpire?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in New York, born and raised in Queens. I've been in Montana for about 13 years now, and starting Vim and Vigor there was great, but launching this second company, which is ShopDot, this tech company, wanted to just be in an environment that had a little bit more tech, more kind of other people doing similar things, because it can be very lonely starting any business, right? And so I just made the decision that I needed to go back and forth to, you know, do what I need to do.
Yeah. How did you originally find your way to Missoula? Was it school? Was it, how did you get there from New York?
So my life partner, he's a history professor. So he got a job out there as a history professor at the University of Montana. And then so then I made the move there. But it's a big move to go from, I'm born and raised in New York City. I went to school in Chicago. I lived in Chicago for a decade. And then went back to New York and then eventually made my way in Montana. So I am, at this point, I'm a Montanan. Just I've been there for 13 years. But it was a definite shock.
Yeah. How do you make it work? Like what's your setup like? Like how do you streamline the going back and forth? Do you have places set up in both cities that you can kind of come and go to, or what's your setup like?
Yeah. So I think that for me, I need to feel like a sense of home wherever I'm at, because there's so much uncertainty and so many ups and downs with running a business that I need one aspect of my life to be somewhat stable, if that makes sense. And so for me, having a grounded place in New York is really important. So I actually have an apartment in Union Square area, and then I have my place in Missoula. So that's kind of how I've been going back and forth.
Got it. And then during the summers,
I go to upstate New York on the St. Lawrence River, and I fish every morning before I start work. So I'm like an avid fisherwoman.
Nice. So between upstate New York and Missoula, you've got some amazing fishing that you can do.
Oh my God, the best. Got fly fishing. I got, the St. Lawrence River fishing. So it's pretty amazing.
What is something that went to school in Montana, spent 15 years here. I spent a lot of time in Montana here. I'm here right now. What do you think people misunderstand about Montana? Because I feel like you said, it's gotten on the radar more recently. People have their own stereotypes about it. But like, what is it you think people most misunderstand about the state?
I think that they don't quite understand the topography of the state. I think they just assume that you must live on a ranch on like about 20 acres of land. And that's what they assume about Montana. And I'm like, no, I live in a city lot in Missoula. It's, a very kind of standard home. It's 1500 square feet. It's not like this kind of sprawling kind of ranch. I think that they think that. They think it's, there's like this mystique of Montana, especially with that show Yellowstone, which I still have not seen yet. I know most Montanans I know have not seen that show. See? So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. No, it's a cool setup you've got. I want to talk about Vim and Vigor. So you have where you do a bunch of stuff, Vim and Vigor, Shop Dot, a lot of other things. So Vim and Vigor, you sell compression socks. You've been running this business for 8 years?
10 years. 10 years. Yeah. Yep. 10 years.
Ten years. Why did you start it?
So I started Vim and Vigor because at the time when I moved to Montana, I couldn't really find a job. And so I was in biotech and healthcare. And so I did a job doing pharmaceutical sales. And I covered the state of Montana, eastern Idaho, and northern Wyoming. Like I had a massive geography. And I was sitting a lot. And I just noticed that my legs were tired. And I talked to a friend who's a physical therapist. And he's like, you should wear compression socks. And at the time, I'm like, I'm young, I'm 30 years old. Why do I need to wear compression socks? But when I looked into it, there were all these benefits. And I don't know, why do entrepreneurs start companies? It's one of those things that it's so funny. What my friend's passing comment of you should wear compression socks completely changed my life, right? It's when you think about the kind of from a meta standpoint, how crazy that is. That you can make just one little comment to a friend or to an acquaintance and how it completely can change a trajectory of someone's life is kind of a really amazing thing. But it did. And it was one of those things that I couldn't shake. I just felt that I had to get stylish, comfortable, affordable compression socks in the world. I knew nothing about manufacturing. I knew nothing about brand. I was in corporate America. I was making good money. There was no reason for me to do this, but I just couldn't shake it.
Have you grown the business over the years? Is it mostly retail now? Is it all mostly direct to consumer? Like what have been the growth levers that have helped you build this?
So in the early part, it was about 65-70% B2B or wholesale. It was about 25% or so e-commerce and 5% or so Amazon. We were growing really fast. And year over year, a couple 100% growth. We were like Inc. 5000's top growing, you know, fastest growing private companies in 2018. The problem was we were not very profitable. We really kind of sacrificed profitability for growth in the early stages. And I was still working my full-time job for the first couple of years. So it was one of those things where I had employees making several million dollars in revenue, but still working a full-time job. And one of the main reasons for that is we had a pretty substantial line of credit and loan. And there's no bank that would give you a line of credit or loan without an actual W-2. So I kind of continued working. But we were really in pain, even though on the outside, we like, oh, wow, so fast growing, amazing. And in 2018, I was going to all these trade shows. I was going to gift trade shows and apparel trade shows. And I had a coming to Jesus moment when I was like, holy crap, we're growing and our numbers are strong. We have so many employees. We're way overbloated. Our OPEX was stupid high. And our profitability was negative. It was like negative 5%, negative 10% with a line of credit that never revolved. Like you're supposed to revolve your line of credit and pay it down every single year. We never did that. So when I looked at my numbers, I actually completely pulled all the trade shows. I stopped going 180 to all of the main trade shows that we had been going to. And one of the main reasons is when we looked at the numbers, we noticed that the group that we had been bringing in the money that we had were strong in and had kind of helped us get to where we were in terms of the types of retailers we were selling to, their reorder rate wasn't that high. However, there was a segment of retailers, which were the medical retailers, the pharmacies, the durable medical equipment businesses that had higher reorder rates and much higher kind of just order value, average order value. And so I knew that if I stuck with what I was doing, I would just, you had to constantly feed the beast. It was a like leaky bucket, right? You're constantly bringing in these retailers, but they're a lot in volume, but they were leaky. And your acquisition costs for these retailers are really high. So I pulled the plug 180. People thought I was crazy because where we were getting our money, and decided to focus completely on going more medical with our entire line, with our entire brand, with our customer base. And it kind of saved a business, really, in hindsight.
Interesting. And so were you targeting them online with ad campaigns? Were you reaching out to them for wholesale orders, or how were you getting them?
For a lot of these pharmacies and these kind of more medical side, we noticed that there was a lot of inbound. So that was another component too, is we were getting the inbound business from a segment. This other segment of more gift and apparel that we had seen, you know, most of our market share from was mostly outbound. And so, you know, we were just kind of growing in that area. So with that, I did a 180. I went through a pretty significant round of layoffs to get our OPEX down. And and we also kind of flipped our business from not being so heavily reliant on retailers to being more e-commerce. Now e-commerce is about 65% of our business. Wholesale is still about 25-30%. We do Amazon too, but it's not a massive part of our business. And we're profitable. Last year we were 25% net profit margins. This year, we're bootstrapped. Last year we were up 30%. This year we're up about 15%. Our net profit margins are hovering around 20%. We're trying to do some smart investments of just running a really healthy business. So I went from, you know, growth at all costs, zero profitability, losing a lot of sleep. It's very stressful. I know a lot of people listening who have these businesses go through this, and you learn, and then to completely doing a 180.
What else, apart from your customer focus, do you look back on from that time period? And it just makes you wince a little bit. You're thinking like, oh man, this is a really poor investment, or I was dumping money down the drain. What other big changes did you make to go from, negative margin profitability to 25% margin?
There's a couple. You know, it's like when you deal with those situations, when you're at a place where you see kind of conflicting numbers just on paper, where you have one of the highest revenue years, but your profitability is really low. It's like, okay, what do you do? Do you keep pushing forward or do you pivot? It's a really hard decision to make, whether you decide to, like, I just need to muscle it through or I need to like just, you know, completely make that pivot. And you can't straddle both. Like, unfortunately, like, I think it's one of these things that you have to make a decision. And you're the only one as a business owner who can make that decision, right? A couple things happened during that time. So we were obviously growing really fast with the Vim and Vigor brand. We decided that it was a great idea to try to start this second label that's like a lower price point item, and, you know, worked, put a lot of investment into the design and this other brand and this other website. And that was a mistake. You know, what I should have done is sometimes just focus on your make the main thing, the main thing, keep the main thing, the main thing. That's what we really should have done. And this is just one of many. The second component is during that time from like the 2016 to 18 growth is throwing people at the problem, you know? So when, we need help with customer service. Well, let's add more customer service people. That seems to make sense. Rather than figuring out what are the issues that relate to customer service, you can find that really easily now with AI, right? Solve the problem, the root problem. So it's like, make sure you really focus on the product and get all of that really dialed, because it'll save you so much in the long run. Those are two things. Like, do not throw people at the problem. It's so easy to do because you just don't want to deal with it. And you just were like, and yeah. And then the second thing is just keep the main thing, the main thing. The third thing that I did in addition to looking at the data of where our business was coming from is I did what's called a customer oracle. So what I did is I did an interview, a survey with about 450 of our customers. I did about 12 in-depth interviews with our top customers. And I didn't do it personally. I hired somebody else to do it because I think it's important to have that objectivity. And just to really understand who are these people that are buying so frequently. And what was interesting is those are DTC customers, right? So I did the analytics on our wholesale customers on AOV, reorder rate, all that stuff. But I also did in parallel a customer oracle of our direct customers. And I saw that those customers were people who had a medical need. Those people had to wear compression socks every day. They saw us as not a nice to have, but a need to have item. And so again, both of these things really told me I needed to make this complete shift. And so, yeah, I think there's a couple of components there, but watch your OpEx, keep the main thing, you know, I think those are the two components. And then really, like, really dig into understanding your customers quicker, faster than you know, because I waited a little too long to do that. I waited till things were not great and we were in a bad position. Had I done that kind of maintenance work ahead of time or regularly, I would have found these little signals earlier rather than in a really difficult spot.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you. One thing that stood out to me, the Vim and Vigor e-commerce store, was looking around and I went to your blog, and many e-commerce sites don't even have blogs anymore. Those that do, often the blog is kind of a graveyard, right? Like the last post was like 18 months ago or something. Image link is broken. It just is this neglected part of the website with cobwebs.
Yeah.
And yours, you had an article posted in the last week or two. You had probably, I don't know, a dozen from the last year. It was very, very active. And like, anyway, point being, is that, I'm guessing, given how much you're investing there, is that driving a meaningful amount of business
huge
for you? Is that a pretty large driver? Really?
Huge. SEO accounts for almost 40% of our e-commerce revenue, which is huge.
Wow.
Depending on the time of year, but anywhere between 35 to 40%, depending, you know, on the month. But let's just say call it 35%. So pretty, really significant. We're crushing it in SEO, and so, you know, with a product like ours, we really focus on those long tail keywords, obviously. Like, you know, this is typical SEO stuff. We don't really, you know, you can try to get compression socks, but you're not getting a high intent to buy. So we churn out a ton, I think anywhere between 4 to 6 blog articles a month, and very focused on a particular problem solution. I think that that's the real, if you look at our blog posts, it's a very specific problem solution that we are, you know, talking about, writing about, and we're doing great in that.
Has the efficacy of that stayed constant for you, or have you seen the ROI from SEO decrease? Because I feel like on my side, I've talked about this a lot, but, and I don't think I'm alone here, the ROI put into SEO has gotten dramatically more difficult to justify, even in the last 18 months.
So if you look just at on paper, our SEO revenue as a percent, organic traffic, is up from last year, and it's up about 60%. So I looked at these numbers most pretty recently. The effort to get that, though, is significantly higher. It's much, a lot on the back end has to, in terms of the type of content that we generate, the links are a lot more difficult to obtain. There's just a lot more effort that goes on in the back end. And it'll be really interesting to see how the algorithms change things, because like you even know now when you type in any Google, the AI, Google is like the first thing. It's not actually organic, obviously you have your ads and then you have organic. So it kind of pushes everything down. And what's kind of unfortunate is even when I do utilize Google and see the AI kind of component at the top, it's oftentimes not right. I think that obviously that's like a moving target and they're trying to make that more effective, but that's not based on organic traffic. So it'll be really interesting to see, it's something that is a huge revenue driver for us, but we have to put in so much more energy and more money into growing that part of the channel.
How much are you investing in that? Like in terms of, not even investing, but how is it structured? Are you running point on that? Do you have an editor that works with a lot of writers? Because I noticed that you generally have one author and then you have someone who scientifically reviews each post, mm-hmm. which is very cool. Yeah. I don't know if that's an SEO strategy or a, mm-hmm. But yeah, talk a little bit about how it's organized, because that's also one of the parts is to be able to do that well, you need a lot of people involved in that machine.
Yeah, so I have a great vendor partner that I work with, Rake the Web. So if anyone wants any recommendations, I'm more than, Jason's fantastic. So I've been working with him for a couple of years. So, we create obviously the content briefs on what the type of content they're constantly taking a look at. Any of the backlinks coupled with any affiliates. Keep in mind, though, that we also put money into PR. So we were most recently featured in like AARP, Good Housekeeping, we were named one of the best compression socks. The Strategist, we were named number one compression sock. So that adds to your SEO because you're looking at those affiliate links, but like any type of link which helps increase your traffic. So I really think it's a combination of the PR work. And PR is the most controversial thing ever. I've had it since launch. I've done PR every month for the past 10 years. And you know what? Every month I'm like, why are we investing in PR? Oh, this is such an expensive line item. We got to get rid of PR. And then we get a hit. And then it's like all's right in the world. And we're like, okay, they're doing a good job. And let's keep it on. But honestly, I swear, every quarter I'm with my marketing, my marketing person's like, I don't know about PR now because I've kind of transitioned that over to her to worry about. But it's a really funny thing. I know anyone who has a brand probably thinks this. But I do think that PR in combination with SEO is an important component in terms of driving organic traffic because those media links are, have a really kind of high, website and brand integrity and all of that. And they drive a lot of content. So, with that, we also have a blog writer and we just generally have one blog writer because it's really important to have a kind of a single voice. So it doesn't seem incongruous with like the rest of the brand or the rest of the site. And we also have a scientific reviewer because at the end of the day, remember, focus on quality, on scientific backing. And so we have like a medical kind of expert making sure that not only is this information accurate, but having that kind of scientific stamp of approval. And I think all of those little things, the thing about SEO is it's not one thing, it's a million things. This is why it's so difficult.
Yeah. Now you've obviously done a really nice job with it. Can you say that name one more time? Who's the SEO agency or contact that you used and recommend?
Yeah. So I use Break the Web and they are awesome. I've been using them for the past, I would say over about 3 years, and they're crushing it with their SEO.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Phil from saddlebox.net, which is a pet subscription box for equestrian enthusiasts. And met Phil at multiple events. He's been a member since about 2020. And here's what he has to say about his experience with e-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure founders.
Anytime I have any kind of a question about how to run an online business, I can just hop on my computer or on my cell phone, type out a post, and really quickly I'll have lots of great suggestions from people about how to solve the problem. I also check it every single day, even if I don't have any questions. A lot of times I'll read a post and see an idea from somebody that I've never had before that I can apply to my business to make it better right away. It's really cool. It's like having your own board of advisors at your fingertips at all times of the day.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. I want to ask you about ShopDot here in a minute, but before we do, what was it like? So you were very generous. Sales taxes are just an absolute disaster in terms of compliance for e-commerce store owners. The opportunity came up to Congress to testify in front of Congress. So you did that on behalf of the, just in general, kind of on behalf of the e-commerce field community, but really on behalf of like the e-commerce community in general. What was that experience like? Like from, I mean, just nerves, preparation. Give us the little inside peek at what it's like to go testify.
I get an email from, you know, Senator Dayne saying, because so Senator Dayne's in Montana, he's our senator. He's part of the Senate Finance Committee. There are several states in the United States, as we all know, Oregon, Montana, New Hampshire, that does not have state sales tax. Yet, you know, we have to deal with remitting sales tax with thresholds and all of that stuff. And it's something that we deal with. We all deal with this. Everyone who listens to this deals with this with whatever platform they use. And so they wanted a business owner from one of those states. There's not a lot of e-com businesses in Montana. So I don't know, Andrew, did you call me about this? How did this come about again? I totally was looking through my email. I couldn't remember.
If I remember correctly, I was chatting with a representative from Dayne's office. They asked if either I or somebody else in our committee would be willing to testify about this. And unfortunately, due to a conflict, I wasn't able to do it. But they said, do you know any other store owners in Montana that could do this? And so I asked around and you immediately came to mind. And so I reached out to you. You said you'd be up for it. And so I think I put you in touch and it went from there.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. So to prepare for it, I had to write out what I was going to read. Nothing is, you know, spontaneous. And they reviewed it. They approved it. And basically, it's just kind of a plea to the Senate Finance Committee about how laborious states remitting state sales tax is for business owners, e-commerce owners. And a lot of them are small business owners. The amount of time, the amount of cost, the amount of just like stress and concern when you get a letter from the Department of Illinois, Department of Revenue from whatever state that you owe this money that you didn't collect to sales tax in is a very stressful thing. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. And so I flew there. I went there. I got a tour. It was amazing. And then I sat in this amazing room and all the senators kind of came through. I was on C-SPAN and I got asked questions by like Hassan and Dayne's and Grassley. I mean, Senator Grassley, like it was kind of crazy. I mean, they were very gracious and they were kind of surprise attacks or anything like that. They just wanted to hear the perspective of an e-commerce seller and the challenges of dealing with state sales tax. So it's still an ongoing thing. They said they would bring me back once they kind of solidify or you know, whatever they plan on doing. So still waiting for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing it. Super important and yeah, a really cool experience, and appreciate you speaking on behalf of the whole community. Cause yeah, it's such a disaster of a system that thankfully someone's getting the word out that something needs to be fixed about it. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about ShopDot. So
yeah,
can you describe what this is another business that you've started. Talk about what it does and why you started it.
So ShopDot is a platform that helps service businesses easily sell the products that they recommend. So if you think about your medical, all your acupuncture, your physical therapy's office, where they're like, you go in, you're getting all this treatment. They're like, oh, you should get this resistance band and you should get these products. But there's never an easy way for these service businesses to say like, actually, here's my store. You can just place the order here and the brands will ship it out to you. So it kind of combines the ease, I would say, of an affiliate platform, but with the functionality of drop shipping. So the way that it works is brands would get on ShopDot. It's free for brands to join. And then these retail partners, as we call them, predominantly service businesses, can partner with those brands, publish those products onto an online storefront that's powered by ShopDot, and we help them complete the entire transaction. So they can curate their favorite products in one place. Their customers can check out all in one place, and we route the orders back to the brands to ship it out to the end customer. And so I thought of this idea during COVID and during 2020. A lot of my, not only retailers, but keep in mind, I sell to a lot of doctor's offices, are like, hey, can you ship this out to this customer? There was like all of this going on. And so, you know, I just felt a need to start something like this. And I raised money for it. I decided to go the venture capital route instead of bootstrapping it. So that was fun.
Man, so two questions come to mind. One, so I have a dropshipping background. That's kind of how I got started in e-commerce. And a lot of my experience was there. I found that in 2016, 17, it got dramatically harder. And I think it's only gotten more difficult since then. So how does this work well? How does the business model, how do people make it work given the headwinds in dropshipping? Which is, I know this isn't exactly dropshipping, but it's very, very similar.
It is. Yeah. It's the same functionality. I think number one is who our focus is. We do not focus on e-commerce sellers. So if you go to most of your dropshipping platforms, you're working with another e-commerce, straight up e-commerce store, e-commerce seller, someone who's looking to bring on all these products and create their own marketplace. That's not who our target is. Our target is the physical therapy clinic, the pet grooming franchise. We just actually picked up a pet grooming franchise that has several hundred franchisees. These are people who are looking to do retail to make additional revenue that's beyond their core offering. So they have their core business, which is service, whatever that may be, but there's an opportunity for them to bring in retail in a very easy way. They have the trust of the customers. And so ShopDot just allows these service businesses to make additional revenue. And just to kind of bring it back to my family, like my mom had a hair salon, you know, a service business. My dad had an ice cream store, service business. You know, what they could make was pretty limited in terms of just my mom didn't cut somebody's hair or do a perm, she wasn't getting paid, right? But what if she was able to add additional revenue by selling the products that she recommended? And so that's where ShopDot really differs, is we focus on service businesses where retail is not a core part of their business.
Got it. They already have the demand, the in-person demand. They just need an easy way to fulfill extra upsells. It's more or less.
Exactly. So. Yeah. They already have the customers. They have the relationships. They're already recommending the products. The last thing that they're doing, they're not going to do affiliate links and they're not going to build an e-commerce store. They're not going to do it. So ShopDot, we have retail partners building their online store in like under 5 minutes, and then they're partnered with brands and can stand it up immediately.
What was the process of raising money like? And like, I mean, you got a loan for Vim and Vigor, but you were still very much in control. It was taking a loan you pay back is very different than raising venture capital. So how is that experience? What's that experience been like, and the good and the bad?
I mean, the good is that I feel really lucky in terms of the investors that I have on my cap table. The hard thing is there's a specific timeline for when they want to see revenue, when they want to see traction. And those expectations are can be somewhat formulaic. I mean, they say triple, triple, double, double. That when you triple sales, double sales, double sales. It's like this formula that you have in tech and in B2B SaaS that is like a mantra that, you know, in the community people have. And so with that is different levels of pressure that I didn't quite realize. I mean, I realized it, but it's like, okay, and you really have to figure out your product market fit fast. You don't have a ton of time, money to like try to figure it out. You have to figure it out really, really fast. And if it doesn't work, you got to move on, figure out what that next stage is. And so that has been the biggest thing. And plus, when you have other people's money, it's a different level of pressure that you feel. Like you don't want to, you know, disappoint them. You don't want them to lose their money. I didn't really take a ton of money from friends and family. So they're mainly institutional investors, but it's a different level of pressure there.
And I always like asking this question: between e-commerce and the SaaS model, which is kind of what you're building, which one do you prefer? Do you have a favorite?
Man, I feel like intellectually, from a meta standpoint, the SaaS is really hard, but if I could figure it out, is in like super, super rewarding. And because there's a million permutations of what it could be, I can tweak the platform just slightly, and then I would go after a completely different market. And it's because, and so you're really forcing yourself to set boundaries much more so than a product. With a product, it's like somebody's buying my compression socks. They need to wear compression socks. You sell them, they give you money. You give them the socks. They wear it, they like it or they don't like it, right? When you're dealing with tech, you have to force trade-offs so much, and you have to force boundaries in just such a different way. And so it's really hard to answer that. Both are hard, both are rewarding. I think Shopdot has a really good chance. We're starting to get really great traction. I think it can help a lot of people. And the scale of it is huge too, right? If I can help all these like hundreds of thousands of service businesses, that's pretty significant.
Well, Michelle, congrats on Vim and Vigor. Congrats on Shopdot and the traction there. If you are listening and happen to have a business that sounds like it might be a good fit, you've got in-person demand or demand that you can recommend for products, you just want to be able to easily sell them or be able to sell them from other vendors that you have good relationships with. Shopdot.com, is that correct?
Shopdotapp.com.
Shopdotapp.com, check it out. Vimvigor.com for the compression socks. And thank you again for being able to testify in front of Congress. Like, it's a very cool experience, but you got to like do the prep. You got to fly to DC. It's kind of a big deal. So there's some nerves involved.
Oh my God.
Huge thank you for doing that as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Andrew. Appreciate it. Appreciate what you guys are doing here too. It's totally saved my butt. I'm telling you, in 2018 was when late 2018 was when I joined e-commerce Fuel, and it really saved my business. Seriously.
Good. That's awesome. Was there something in particular that was helpful, a certain topic or like area that was especially helpful to check in or connect with people about?
I would just say the community of people, and there's so much information. Like as I was digging into trying to figure out what to do, I would just go down these rabbit holes in forums and get so much rich information for me to just be a better business owner. I mean, honestly, it was just, I was truly trying to figure out like, you know, what to do. And then somebody suggested e-commerce Fuel, I joined and immediately just really dove right in. And so many of the tips from the other founders helped me.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, Claire. It's been a good resource, and it's been so good to have you in the community. And we'll look forward to hopefully catching you at some point this summer in Montana.
Yeah, sounds great. Awesome. Thanks, Andrew.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at eCommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at eCommerceFuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard. Adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.